Wish the rest of you would, too. You know, a meeting like this, a person always asks himself, what's the flavor of this thing going to be? Well, I think we ought to say just a word about that. As men who are working in the area of field work at our seminaries, naturally we look at this thing from the perspective of the seminary to a great extent. And you, brethren, are looking at this thing from the point of view of the so-called field. And we ask ourselves whether field is doing what we want, we would like to see happen, and you ask whether the seminaries are doing what you'd like to see happen to these men before and after you have had them. Well, I don't think anybody's on the spot these days, but I think we are here to share with one another. I think we fieldwork men have some questions we'd like to ask you, and I'm sure that you have things that you want to ask us about, and I think together we're going to give have an exchange of ideas, and because I think the one thing that all of us have in mind is the bettering of a good program that we have in the church, and that's, I think, the fundamental theme of this whole thing. How can we, is there anything that we can do to improve the program that we have? Now, the subject that I'm going to work with a little while today is this subject, the vicarage's field education. Now, we haven't written, either Paul and I have written papers. We're simply going to talk to you a little bit about this. This is the philosophy of field work that we have adopted, and I think the field generally has accepted as the guiding principle in the field work program. First of all, we ought to say that the vicarage program began, as you know, as a kind of a stopgap measure. Some of you were involved in it. I know what I was. They just told me to go home because we were simply turning them out too fast, that's all, and we couldn't absorb them that fast. Well, then, when the Missouri Synod gets in the habit of doing something, it just kind of keeps on doing it, and this is a kind of a good thing that we kept on doing. Because really, in among the Protestant churches today, we have an enviable record of in our field work program. Many others are trying to find out what we're doing in order to pattern, I mean our vicarage program, in order to pattern theirs after us. Everybody seems to like this program. The seminary certainly likes it. Because we think that this year of field experience represents an important part of the students' training. The students themselves like it. They come back rejoicing. They go out with some fear and trepidation, and that's still good. But they come back rejoicing over this year of experience, and I hope that the supervisors find this a worthwhile activity for them and for their congregation. Now we say that the vicarage program is a year of training, and we mean that. It's a year of instruction. We call it the SEM 3 year. It's a year for which the students receive credit, which is required of all students. And it's interesting, you probably undoubtedly know this, that the draft recognizes this year as a year of study. And in 1966, the Income Tax Office finally recognized that as a year of training also, and has exempted the vicars from paying a tax on that money which they receive as compensation for the service that they render on vicarage. This report is in your manual. It's, it's this letter dated March 30, 1966. It's in the rear part of your manual right before the comprehensive fieldwork report. And if you look on page 3 of that letter, there you'll find, I think, the pertinent paragraphs. It says, the payment in question are for services in the nature of part-time employment required as a condition of receiving the payments, and the services are required of all candidates as a condition of receiving a Bachelor of Divinity degree from Concordia. In view of the close relationship between the school's requirements and the vicarage program, in view of the announced format of this program, it is held that the primary purpose of the vicarage year is to train vicars to be pastors in the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and any service performed by the vicars in that capacity are merely incidental to their education and training. in light of the recent developments in the interpretation of the law as evidenced in the ruling as listed, we have reconsidered our previous ruling to you, and we conclude that the amounts paid to the vicars and the amounts that they receive to cover expenses for travel and other designated expenses are excludable from gross income under Section 117A of the Code. That, of course, is a tremendous amount of relief for the students themselves, and I'm sure they're taking full advantage of it. But all we want to point out here is that we regard this as a year of training. Now, what's this student had before you get him? That's point two. What is his formal schooling like? Well, the St. Louis vicars have had the so-called system training, most of them, and they've had their first 2 years of seminary training. Our students from the Springfield Seminary, you'll be interested to know that today 83% of our entering students already have their Bachelor of Arts degree. It's required of all students who are 27 years old and younger. Close to 85% of them now have their Bachelor of Arts degree before we have them on our campus, and they also spend 2 years on our campus. This, in very brief, is the formal training that they've had. Of course, all the students have had courses in the practical area, in homiletics, in liturgics, in sermon delivery. They have progressed, as you did when you were in school, up to a certain level in their exegetical training and in their training in systematic theology. I haven't taken the time to run a breakdown because I don't think, frankly, that you're that much interested in it. They are equipped to a point. They are certainly not finished products yet by any means, and that's why our third point, C, is the accent on learning. But you notice that point B is wedged in between A and C, and here we're supposed to hear from two students, and Paul has said he would introduce them if they're here. Why, I think they can take over at this juncture and discuss what they hope to learn and to do on their vicarage.
Fellows, would you like to come forward? I think this is a first also. I don't know of a time when two vicars who were about to go out on vicarage, just having received their assignment about a month ago, talked to a group of pastors, I suppose we could say a typical group, where they will be serving. I want to say something, too, about their unusual places of service, at least one of them. The one is going to be serving in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for Pastor Prenslow for the Lutheran Campus House Ministry, which is completely contrary, I'll warn you in advance, to our philosophy of where a vicarage should be spent. But we believe it should be in a parish specifically. And all the rest of them really are. This one, in a sense, is not. We're doing this on a kind of experimental basis, and Kurt Peters has been assigned to this, and I'm sure he'll have some rather unusual things that he'll be looking for in his vicarage, but he's going to speak to us broadly and generally at the same time. And then the other, Tom Windsor, has been assigned to Beckemeyer's Church in Park Forest, Illinois, a fine suburban area, as I understand, of Chicago. And he, too, has some ideas of what he would like to find and experience on his vicarage. So let's see, who did we decide would speak first? Kurt? Tom? All right. Tom Windsor, would you please come up and tell us your hopes and expectations? And then I'll not introduce you again, Kurt. When he's finished, you can go right on.
It's an honor to be here, believe me. I've jotted down a few notes so that the next 10 minutes won't be sort of a rambling experience. I understand that I'm to convey to you what I expect on my year of extern experience. In order for this next 10 minutes to be of optimum value to both of us, I'll be as frank as possible. I have approximately 4 points that I'd like to elucidate. Number one, I think the most important thing on the vicarage, the thing that will make or break the vicarage experience for me, is the relationship and the rapport that I have with my supervisor. The information that I have comes from past vicars, many of whom were disappointed because they found that upon arrival, their supervisors were rather insecure, or they seemed rather resentful of the vicar. I think that the relationship between the vicar and the supervisor is keynoted by trust and forgiveness, frankly. You have to realize that a vicar is a young man who is an incorrigible idealist. He will see things the way he thinks they should be seen rather than often the way they are. And this will take no undue amount of forgiveness on your part and understanding. Now, this ideal type of relationship may very well come to fruition in the first couple of months for some of you. For some of you, it may take almost a whole year. But I think this is something that really should be in the back of your mind and something you should be striving for continually. Because if this forgiveness is not centered, is not central and communicated, resentment might possibly build up between the vicar and the supervisor. I am hoping that two things are present in this relationship. One, honesty, of course, and the second of all is freedom. Now, I am not one who wants freedom from supervision. I think oftentimes we take the leap of faith, if you will, and think of it in terms of that alone. I would like the type of freedom in which the supervisor can very freely question what I'm doing, the type of freedom in which I can question my own actions as well as the existing methods of operation in the parish too. Point number two, I hope that this year will help me to see myself in a pastoral perspective. And what do I mean by those words? I hope that you, as the supervisor, will challenge me to be able to think on my feet in order to be able to react effectively in a crisis situation, and by this to sharpen the focus on my own weaknesses and my own strengths, and to start eliminating and developing right while I'm in my in-service year. Also, I'd like to see how my attitudes, my classroom academic attitudes of the church and of people and of the effect of the gospel on people's lives can relate to the attitudes I'll have while I'm working in the parish. Number three, I would very much like to share in the total parish program. I would hate to think that you would see the vicar as an official Missouri Synod observer, but rather to ask him to share in the totality of the parish program. Granted, a year is a very short time in which to do something like this, but several vicars have been very dissatisfied with their year of parish experience for the following reason. Oftentimes, the pastoral supervisor, I shouldn't make that statement, there have been occasions where the pastoral supervisor has seen the work of a vicar as more of an office boy. Now, I think administration and public relations is a very vital part of the parish ministry, but I'm sure you'll agree with me that it's not the all-consuming task of a vicar. I believe that my participation in the worship life of the church, her preaching life, calling on delinquents, youth ministry, calling on the sick, and of course Christian education. If I can have a representative experience in all of these things, then I'll begin to understand what makes people think, how they live and how they work, and how they react to this power of the gospel in their lives. And point number four, my fourth and last point, is that I would like to grasp the dynamics of Christian education and Christian preaching. And what do I mean by this? I see these as the two most important functions of the ministry, preaching and teaching. And these are things that I'm looking forward to with very great anticipation. I have weaknesses and strengths in both, I suppose, as do all vicars. But I hope that your expectations will be higher than my ability to fulfill them in a way. I'll be disappointed if you don't expect a great deal of me. For instance, preaching once a month, or maybe once every 5 weeks or something like that, in no way approximates the preaching situation in your parish. In other words, if you give a vicar 3 to 4 weeks for sermon preparation, or 2 to 3, it's not going to encourage him to exegize and to organize and to conceptualize his sermon in an economy of time, which is the type of thing in which you're working in from week to week. Also, in teaching experience, I hope and pray that my supervisor does not see the vicar as a substitute teacher who darts from class to class in a substitute capacity. In other words, I would like to have a situation where The entire class is mine. I have the responsibility to organize the class and to see it through the entire course of study so that I can grow with the children or with the adults, regardless, depending on what the situation is. This about sums it up for the 4 points. That most important, of course, is my relationship with the supervisor, that it be keynoted by trust and forgiveness with honesty and freedom. Second of all, I hope to get a better understanding of myself, to see myself in a pastoral perspective. Number three, I would like very much to share as much as possible in the totality of the parish program. And number four, I would like to grasp the dynamics of Christian education and the art and the science and the challenge of preaching. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My comments are going to be in the way of footnotes to what Tom has already said. Sometimes I will be emphasizing what he's pointed out, on other occasions going off in slightly different tangents. I would first and foremost like to emphasize that I hope that during my vicarage experience, I will be able to be of service to the parish. The way the vicarage experience is outlined, it's to be a training experience, a learning experience for the vicar. But it would be unfortunate if that learning experience wasn't also an opportunity for the parish, for the people in the congregation, for the pastor too, to grow in the faith. So I hope that my vicarage experience will be just that, an opportunity and assistance for the people in the parish, the people with whom I will be serving, to grow in the faith. As far as my future service, training for future service is concerned, I hope that my vicarage experience will allow me an opportunity to work in a variety of situations. That during my vicarage, I will have a chance, for example, to work with different types of organizations. Now, mine is the unique situation, so I will have mine will be a little bit different than the normal parish. But if I were going into the normal parish, I would say that I would like to work with the various organizations or work in various types of situations that come up. Counseling, for example, is an area that we have not too much firsthand experience in right now. And I would like to work with all ages. There are some age groups with which we don't have too much contact during our years at the seminary and our pre-seminary years. Now, this doesn't mean that we're going to have specific tasks in all of these areas. Maybe this won't be possible sometimes. But I at least hope that I will be able to sit down with my pastor, and where we can't work in an area, that we will be able to discuss some of the special problems, difficulties, things to look out for when working in that sort of a situation. I hope that my vicarage will allow me to synthesize my theology a bit. When we're studying here at the seminary, we study doctrine, biblical theology, etc., quite thoroughly and deeply. And many times we think we've thought them through completely, but we haven't. And this is one thing that's going to be pointed out to us on the vicarage. When we begin to work with people, to bringing what we've learned to the needs of people, we're going to find out that we have gaps that shouldn't be there. And it's going to send us back to Scripture, to the confessions, to conversations with people to learn. And I do hope that my vicarage will be of considerable assistance in helping me to synthesize, to complete this theology as much as it's possible to do so. I hope that my vicarage will teach me how to fail. We all experience failures, I suppose, of one sort or another. And we all recognize, I think, all too well, that there are failures in the parish ministry. But the young seminarian going out for vicarage or to his first charge is apt to think that somehow he can avoid these failures. I think this way. I know that I shouldn't. And it's going to be a great lesson for me to learn when I can learn that these things are in God's hands and that our best plans, the things that we think are going to work out the best, many times are going to fail because this may be what God has in store for those particular plans. There's a story that Mr. Siebel from CPH told us a while back. A woman went into a dime store and was looking at some of the toys. She wanted to pick out one for her child. And looking at things that are educational, and she couldn't figure out this one toy, so she called the clerk over and asked him what it was supposed to be. The clerk said, oh, this is a very important toy for any child. It teaches the child how to bear the frustrations of adult life. He said, no matter how you put it together, it doesn't work. Well, I don't expect that the vicarage and the work of the parish will be quite like that. But I know there will be failures, and I'm hoping that during the vicarage I will learn how to fail and learn how to trust God and grow in faith through these failures. I hope that during the vicarage I will learn how to apply effectively what I've learned at the seminary. Many of the things that we've learned at the seminary are now head knowledge, facts and theories, and only facts and theories. And until they can be applied to particular needs, to particular situations of people, they will not have accomplished what they're intended to accomplish. So I do hope that this is affected during the vicarage. By the same token, I hope that during the vicarage I will be able to continue to learn, and among other things, to continue to learn facts and theories. Sometimes the vicarage is distinguished from a person's seminary study by a distinction between learning from books while one's at the seminary and relating with books while one's at the seminary, and then relating to people while one's on the vicarage and somehow applying what one has learned to the book, from the books to the situations with people. And there's some truth to this. It's valid in part, but it can be a bit misleading because on the one hand, it may lead people to mistakenly think that seminarians don't relate with people and never have occasion to practice their Christian beliefs and understandings in their relationships with people. We won't have the same kind of relationships in the parish that we've had at the seminary, but certainly we do relate with a good many people every day. And on the other hand, and this is the more serious mistake, is that it leads people sometimes to think that now the seminarian should have the information at hand that he needs for the vicarage experience and for his relationships with people. That the information, the facts, and the theories the seminarian should have learned while he was at the seminary. And now in the field, he should apply these to situations. And the point of the matter is, and you all know this, I'm not telling you anything new, that when a person gets out in the vicarage or into the parish, he realizes how much more he needs to know. So I hope that during my vicarage, I will be led to study deeper and to learn more things, even facts and theories and the like. I hope that during my vicarage I will learn quite a bit about administrative techniques, matters having to do with the budget and the like. These are things we talk about a bit in class, but they're hard to learn away from the firing line, away from the firsthand experience. And although I won't have any insights or any experience to bring to bear on these problems, I hope the pastor will take me in hand and give me some directives in these important parts of a pastor's work. I hope that during the vicarage I will begin to learn some important things about the pastor's role and living as a pastor. It's quite a jump to make to jump from being a student to being a pastor. And you all know of cases where this hasn't been accomplished too successfully. I hope here too that I will be able to learn from the pastor's experiences. He's gone through so much more than I have, and he'll be able to help me a lot with this. It's an important lesson to learn, probably one we don't talk about much, but I hope that through the year this learning experience will be going on. And finally, and perhaps most important for my training for future ministry, is that I hope to grow in the faith during my vicarage. I hope that during my vicarage I don't simply learn what people are like, that I don't learn about administration, learn more facts and theories and so forth, but that together with this I grow in the faith and grow closer to Christ, just as I hope that the parishioners and the pastor will grow closer to Christ during that year. Now these sound pretty general, so I've tried to narrow them down and list a few specific hopes in one important aspect of the vicarage experience that will help to focus, I think, a little bit what I'm saying. And that is something that Tom already touched on, and the relationship between the vicar and the supervising pastor. I hope that during my vicarage, my pastor and I will have the freedom to discuss various problems and topics, that we will feel entirely free to sit down and talk about things because I want to learn from his experiences. He's done so much more than I have. He knows so much more than I do in a certain vital parts of pastoral work, And I want to gain this experience, too, as rapidly as I can. I can do part of this through discussions with a pastor. And I hope that we have the freedom that we're able to discuss just about any topic, or I can leave out the just about, that we're able to discuss any topic that might seem important at the time, because we do have a lot of questions and things that need to be answered. In my relationship with the supervising pastor, I hope that we have the freedom to pray and worship together. Not that this needs to be set up in a formal basis or anything like that, but that we feel free and comfortable to pray together about our work and about other things too, and to worship together, and the two of us. I hope that the pastor will take a close interest in my work and criticize what I am doing. Here again, I want to take advantage of his experience. There's one pastor whom, as I understand it, after each sermon that the vicar delivers, he sits down and talks with the vicar for about 10 minutes and criticizes the doctrinal content, the outline, delivery, everything that goes into a good sermon. And here again, I don't think this has to be a formal thing, but I do hope that the pastor is free in criticizing the work that I do. If he feels that something has, a mistake has been made, I hope that he points it out to me, as frankly as the case calls for. And if he feels that maybe something has been done well, maybe this could be brought to one's attention too, to avoid mistakes in the future. And I hope that my relationship with the pastor will be one in which he will feel free to give responsibilities to the vicar, so that the vicar in certain areas will be able to exercise some original thinking, do some original planning, and carry out some of the types of work on his own that he is going to have to do in the parish. Now, I don't mean that he should do this apart from supervision. And the pastor is just that in the parish. He's the pastor. He's the supervisor. And I hope that even when he gives me freedom, that he will feel free to say that, no, I don't like this idea and don't carry this out. But by the same token, I hope that he does feel free to give me some responsibilities. Now, perhaps I could mention a couple things that I don't expect in the vicarage. I don't expect that the pastor will be a buddy to me. The pastor will be the pastor in the parish. He will be older than I am, and he will be my supervisor, and I will be a vicar. I will be younger than the pastor, and I will be his inferior. And I hope our relationship is built around those roles, that we don't try to play different roles than we're in. Now, maybe sometimes this close buddy relationship does work out very well, and that's fine. But I just hope that in our relationship, we don't try to be people that we're really not. I don't expect the freedom to try just anything in the parish. I will, as I said before, be the inferior to the pastor. He will be the one who's directing the affairs of the congregation. And I may have an idea that I think is great and can't miss and is important for the work of the church. But if he doesn't think that it should be done, if he thinks that there is no good purpose that can be served by working through this, I don't expect him to let me try it. Finally, I don't expect all the tasks in my vicarage to be tasks that I enjoy doing. There is quite a bit of chores, I would imagine, in the ministry, and I expect to take part in that. I hope that, as I mentioned before, that the vicarage will be more than that, but I do expect to take part in all this type of work, too, that goes into the parish ministry. And I must say, as somebody mentioned earlier, that the vicars are really excited about this year of work in the parish. It's something they've been preparing for now for a long time, and it's going to be quite an enriching experience. Perhaps in a few cases it will be an experience which will lead men to decide whether or not to go into the parish or into the teaching ministry or into another type of ministry. Maybe in a couple of cases it will even be the deciding influence in convincing a man whether he should go into the ministry at all. So it's something that the vicars have been preparing for a long time and are looking forward to with great expectation. Thank you.
I'm glad these guys aren't assigned to me.
Well, we're not going to give these bishops equal time for rebuttal or anything like that. We're just going on. But listen, you young men, we certainly want to thank you. You've stolen a lot of my thunder coming up here. And I'm sure you have helped us all along by the comments which you've made. We're going to continue then with our outline, and I hope you don't mind that we're sticking a little bit close to it. Now, in other words, these two men have told us that they hope that they'll learn something on their vicarage. Now, this is a basic philosophy of the vicarage program that has gotten into our bloodstream, and if there's any change that has been effected in the past years in the vicarage program, I think it's this. When this thing started, some viewed the vicarage rather metaphorically. They viewed the vicar in terms of a lemon who ought to be squeezed for 1 year. And others viewed the vicarage as teaching vicars how to drown by putting them into impossible situations. And some regarded them as thumbs that needed to be put into the dike to prevent the waters of confusion from overflowing in the district. Well, all this has changed, and it's a good thing that it has, because today we regard the vicarage as a learning experience. In our recent visitation in Cleveland and Washington, one bishop said, "You might just as well, brethren, regard it as a learning experience, because first 3 months you're teaching him, next 3 months you're teaching him some more, and then about when he's ready to really go, then he leaves." Well, now, that's the other side of the another point of view, but we do think that this is primarily a learning situation. It is field education, and we're going, as these young men indicated, from the theoretical, in which they excel to a certain degree, to the practical. At the seminary, they can say all kinds of things, and the remarkable thing is that there they don't always have to assume the responsibility for their actions. And when they get on the vicarage program, I think that's one of the first root experiences that they have to assume responsibility before the general public of the congregations for the things they say and for the things they do. And this is a maturing experience for these men. Now, we said they need to grow in knowledge, skills, and attitudes. Now, Paul, after a while, is going to discuss the areas. You'll find them on page 2 and 3, and I certainly don't want to steal any of his thunder, and I'm simply going to say that the students, first of all, are not finished products. I think, unless I'm dead wrong, a supervisor may tend to judge the vicar as he would judge one of his contemporaries with many years of experience on his back, and we simply can't do it. These fellows are learning. And they're trying hard, and as you and I try hard to learn some new skill, we make all kinds of little boo-boos as we're doing it. We don't mean to, but we just kind of do. And I think we have to be there to help them along. They're trying to grow in their knowledge of the Word of God. They're trying to grow in their knowledge of people and of the task. They're trying to develop certain skills. We tried to give them some skills, but we don't say that they are all finished products. And they need to develop certain attitudes. And I think personally, in the attitudinal area is where the vicarage can render a tremendous service and is rendering a tremendous service to the seminary. Now, not all men have the same attitudes. In fact, they don't all have the kind of attitudes that we would hope for at the time they go out on vicarage. Some are wondering whether they should be pastors at all. And the vicarage is a kind of period in their life where these attitudes can be molded and builded. And they're going to catch most of their attitudes from you, and of course that makes the role of being a professor as a supervisor a tremendously vital role. Another thing I'm sure we're all aware of is that not all vicars are the same. They haven't all attained the same degree of maturation. 1 year you may get a real hotshot. At least he happens to be a hotshot in your congregation, and that's great. And the next year you may not get a man with all of these talents. And I think we all have to recognize that in the kingdom there are diversities of gifts. And we take the vicar for what he is. start where he's at and work with him from the point of view of where he is. I think making comparisons between this vicar and that vicar and that vicar can be difficult, just like comparing children. Why isn't Susie like Billy? Well, because she's Susie and not Billy, that's why. And the same way with these vicars that come to us. I think we have to kind of start from scratch with everyone and start all over in the process of training. But of course, in the whole process, you're going to be growing too in your ability to deal with fledgling preachers. And then you have to help the student to understand the church and its mission. Now, I think our whole synod and this Detroit convention did some reevaluating of this whole question of the church and its mission. We said to ourselves that the church is people and the mission of the church is carried on where the people are there, and the congregation is there to wash the feet of the disciples and to ready to them for their next sortie into the world. Now, this kind of grasp of the church as mission, we need to convey to our vicars. I think the average vicar has an understanding of the church like his home congregation was. And at the same time, we have to remember that every congregation, I believe, has a kind of a form. That's one of the remarkable insights I got when we were visiting in Cleveland and Washington. And I'm sure that these congregations were typical of congregations. But as you move from congregation to congregation, you could sense, as you talk to the various bishops, the particular forma of that congregation. If you read this account of the 12 great churches in America that the Christian Century ran, you can see there in these accounts of these great churches that each one has a particular forma. And this vicar coming into your congregation has to kind of catch this thing, that this isn't like the congregation he had in Milwaukee or Port Huron or wherever it was, but this is this congregation, and these are the heavy accents in this congregation. This is the adjustment he has to make, and you can help him as his supervisor make that adjustment to your congregation. And then he has to begin to understand better people and ministering to their needs. He has to learn so many of the things that you and I take for granted, that there are individual differences in people, that they don't all react the same. He has to learn the fine art of listening, which many of you have already mastered. He has to learn patience. Thank you. He has to learn patience with people. Usually, one fellow in pastoral theology says, what you just said won't work. And I said, how do you know it won't work? He said, I tried it on vicarage. I said, how many times? He said, once. Patience, brethren, all of us need it. And then respect for people. I think that's something that we learn, respect for the laity. I think the longer we're in the parish ministry, the more we learn to respect God's gifts through his laity. These are things that vicars need to catch. And then he needs to grow in the application of the word. This is very difficult for students. They run out of gas somehow when they get to applications. When it's about thanking God, they're okay there. But getting a little bit more pungent into life is very difficult for them. Same way when they teach, they don't always see the things that you and I see because of our rich experience in dealing with people with the word. To make the word relevant is difficult, and this is one of the areas in which they need to grow and one in which you can help them. And how you're going to do that, I think we'll be seeing as we talk together in these hours. Then finally, I think Paul, this is either original with Paul or he swiped it from a good source. They must think and act practically about theology and theological about the practical. There's a tendency in a certain breed of student to want to philosophize about this thing, and it's very difficult for him to get down to earth with this thing and make it practical. And there are another type of student who is such a wild-eyed activist that it's hard for him to think theologically about anything. He wants to know when the next march is going to be. Instead of examining the theological basis for the march first, he doesn't want to waste too much time with that. So some of them you have to try to help to be more relevant, and others you have to try to help to be more transcendent. Now, I don't know whether you have a transcendent vicar or a relevant vicar. You have to see me about that privately. But this is a part of your task. I just finished Langdon Gilkey's book that you ought to read sometime, How the Church Can Minister to the World Without Losing Itself. And he says this is the problem for the church, to maintain its transcendence and still be relevant. Try to read that book sometime. That's a red-hot book. How the Church Can Minister to the World Without Losing Itself. Langdon Gilkey of University of Chicago. And I was really taken with that book. And of all things, he has a big hunk of his book is telling the church they better get down to business and preach doctrine. And some brethren think that went out when Walther died. All right. The accent on learning, that's what we're hoping for, and that's what you brethren are going to help us with. Then the accent also on serving while learning. And as these two brethren pointed out, they're eager to serve, and most vicars are. They really want to get going. They've been waiting for this, and now they're chafing at the bit, and sometimes they may ride off in eight directions at once, but they really are trying hard because this is what they want to do. And these men indicated that the vicar wants a full-orbed vicarage experience. They don't want to be shunted from classroom to classroom. I'm glad he used that example. It's a good one. Nor do they want to send in a vicarage report in which they report that they spend 50% of their time, as one boy did. The vicar, he wrote P.S. on the back of that thing after his bishop signed it. P.S. At least when I'm finished here, I'll be a good printer. Well, I said that's something. So accent on serving, and we look to you to give these brethren a full-orbed vicarage. Now the next point, we're going to talk more about that, so there's no use belaboring it at this point. Now the vicar is an assistant to the pastor. Now these brethren said something about role too, and this is tremendously important. What does this vicar do? He's neither fish nor fowl. He's neither pastor nor is he layman. He's a kind of a something. Well, what is he? He's assistant to the pastor. That's what he is. And I think in your organizational chart, this has to be made very clear. Because I think once in a while some difficulties arise when this role is not clearly perceived by everyone involved. What does it mean for the vicar? If he's the assistant to the pastor, that means he gets his orders from the pastor. That means he's responsible to the pastor. That means the pastor happens to be boss. And that means that his mortal sin on vicarage is undercutting the preacher. Or starting something the bishop's going to have to live with for the next 100 years. We try to, honestly, Paul and I both do in talking to these vicars, talk real nice about this, but we really try to lay this one on the line, and we want you to know it. And our men see this makes sense. You heard these men verbalize on this thing today. And this assistant to the pastor says a whole lot to the bishop, too. And we're going to be talking an awful lot about that. If he's responsible to you, I think one thing a bishop needs to do is give explicit orders to these vicars. Sometimes they don't know exactly what to do because they haven't been given any explicit orders. They do everything in general and nothing in particular. I don't think any bishop ought to abdicate any responsibility. I think you have to finally be sitting on top of it all. I think it's good to let the vicar try his wings in this area and that area, but you ought to realize that you don't, right after he has his bag unpacked, say, well, tonight I'm giving you the young people, and you say, give with a vengeance. You know what I mean. You just can't do it, brethren. You gotta keep them, even if they don't think they can learn anything from anybody over 30. And then I think if he's your assistant, then I think you have to be true to him, and he's got to know this, and this is important. I think you ought to compliment this young fellow once in a while. Good night. They try hard. And there's nothing that does more for a student's morale, I know, when you say, boy, that was a four-bell sermon you just wrote for me. That was real good. He's on the clouds for 3 weeks until he has to write the next one. Then he wonders where he's going to be when he finishes with that one. But at any rate, I think this is important. He's your assistant, and that means that you don't undercut him either. I think it's a mortal sin for a bishop to pillory a vicar before a voters' meeting, for instance. You got to be ready to pull chestnuts out of the fire for this boy. I mean, that's your part of the gamble. I expect President Preuss to back me to the hilt. He's my boss. And if he doesn't, I don't respect him too much. And I'm going to make mistakes. And that's what we profs do. We want our boss to be there. And when my boss goes into the Board of Control, I got to have the assurance he's on my side, no matter what. I have that assurance, and we profs need it. These vicars need it as far as you're concerned. Now, once in a while, I'm not certainly charging anybody with anything, but I am just saying, just as we say to the vicar, don't undercut this bishop. You live with him in peace and quiet. I say to the bishops, too, and I happen to be talking to you today, kind of take this boy's side. You really, when the chips are down, the big friend he has. I think that this part of it needs to be done. Well, you may want to say more about this later on. I think the congregation needs to understand this. You know, at Corinth, it wasn't Peter's fault, it wasn't Paul's fault, and certainly wasn't Christ's fault that they had all these factions. It was the Corinthians' fault. They didn't understand. And Paul had to tell them about it. Well, I think it's important that our congregations understand this role, too. That's all I want to say on that. Then principals, guiding placement officers. First of all, there's basic philosophy to this. If our philosophy is that they should learn, that guides us in placing them. What do we want them to learn? We want them to learn how the parish functions and how a pastor functions in a parish. So we want parish experiences for our men. We don't want them to go into specialized ministries. Because if a man on his vicarage goes into specialized ministry and after his graduation goes into a specialized ministry, he may never find out what life is like at the parish level. And no matter where he goes, whether it's in foreign missions, no matter where, he should have a sympathetic understanding of what the parish is all about. Now, secondly, we ask ourselves, where can the student best use and improve his talents? I met two bishops today. And they told me which of my men was coming to their congregation. And I remembered them. I knew the man, and I thought this fellow must have an inner-city congregation because I sent him that kind of a fellow. In other words, what we do is try to classify our students for different types of ministries, and we try to match the ministry with the man so that he can best use his talents in the service of God. We're going to do that later on when we place him also. And we ask ourselves that seriously. And then, in the third point, we ask ourselves about the supervisors. Who's this supervisor? We are very much interested in it because, as these students pointed out, the thing that is the most significant part of this program is not where the student goes, but with whom he goes. I always tell the students, you could care less where we send you, but care extremely much about the man with whom you'll be. Ideally, I think a vicarage program ought to be operated with a corps of supervisors whom we use year after year after year, whose confidence we've developed, who know we don't have all lemons and we don't have all plums. You know what I mean, huh? And we can talk real frankly. Well, listen, he's maybe the world's best here, see, you know. Or this year I can say, listen, you really got a peach. He's a good one. I have written some of you about different fellows, and I think Paul has too. I mean, where we can have that kind of candor, see? Right? That, I think, would be ideal. We're developing that. There's a surprisingly large number of you men who have vicars year after year, and you seem to thrive on it. Now, I have a question. We have about 8 more minutes. I have a question I want to ask you. Shall we devise a student's profile sheet to send to a bishop? That's one of my questions I came with. Now, why do I ask that? Well, because, frankly, we're a little bit diffident about writing these letters, see? Because of typing a man and because of prejudicing a bishop, you know, maybe one way or another. Letters are funny things. But still, I feel a little bit uneasy about it. If we don't tell you anything, why should we do that? You don't like that, I'm sure you don't. But on the other hand, we'd like to be honest, real honest, If this fellow can't write a sermon, we're going to tell you he passed everything else, and so we skinned him through on his sermon. I mean, I'd like to put that on paper sometime, but you know, you feel very diffident about that. We usually use figures of speech when we're in trouble like that. Some allow he didn't have such a good eighth grade teacher. You know what I mean. All right.
Well, these men, they probably won't be with us after recess.
Yes. No, maybe not, unless they want to stay here.
Can I disregard your question and ask...
Oh, you do anything you want. Sure, for 5 minutes.
I've been very much interested, and I've heard this before, that some seminary students are having dim views of parish. Whether to go into the parish or whether to go into...